A very good morning to everybody. My name is Ryan Boyd. I head up product and underwriting for the Health International Health line of business at Allianz Partners, and I have the honor of chairing today's session. Just before we begin, I'd like to start off in the appropriate manner by just acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting here today, either physically if you are here today or virtually at home. I just want to pay my respects to their elders past and present. Now, I don't know if you are anything like me when it comes to artificial intelligence. I'm one of those people that when I get to the pedestrian crossing at the traffic lights, that I push the little button very gently and respectfully with the utmost love for the machine that's about to try and get me across the road. I do this for when the machines do take over, that they will remember that I treat them with kindness and love and that they will spare me at that time. But today we get the opportunity to talk a little bit more about artificial intelligence in insurance and also insuring artificial intelligence as well. So when we listen to our speakers coming up very, very soon, or our speaker in this sense, because Jonathan does send his apologies, we were expecting him to be here. Unfortunately, due to an unforeseen emergency, he unfortunately had to pull out at the very last minute. But we do have Kush speaking with us here today. And in terms of his introduction, Kush is a manager at Taylor Fry, providing actuarial advice and working on analytics and predictive modeling projects for government agencies, injury and disability schemes, and general insurers. His engagements include CTP pricing, workers' compensation, digital health, lifetime pathway modelings, and actuarial advice to general insurers and self-insurers. Before we hand over to Kush, I just wanted to remind you there's an opportunity to ask questions. You may see some microphones in the front, but we're not going to encourage you to come all the way down and make yourself uncomfortable, but we would encourage you to embrace technology, which is fitting, given that we're talking about AI, that you can use the app which you would have downloaded prior to the conference itself and pop your questions in the session right there. I'll be manning the tablets on that side and I'll be monitoring those questions, and when at the end of Kush's talk I will be able to refer those questions to him. So thank you for your time and looking forward to today's session, but please welcome Kush.
Thanks, Ryan, and thank you for chairing the session. And thanks, everyone, for coming along. So we'll get stuck into it. AI in insurance and insuring AI. We're super excited to talk about AI. We've put it in the title of this presentation twice, just to draw that emphasis. But through the session, we're going to take a fairly broad view of what AI is and really think of it as what a computer's doing, what we'd ordinarily associate with human intelligence. And, of course, AI is everywhere. We've got a few examples up here. And, you know, the excitement for AI ranges from dentists to landscapers to dog walkers, just all over. In terms of insurers have arguably been using AI for the past few years. Traditionally, granular modeling's probably been in the domain of underwriting and pricing. But as you see, we've got quite a few examples up here with insurers looking to apply AI across that insurance value chain. And so there's a whole heap of examples up there. And you really could have a session just talking about the use cases. But our focus for this session is really the stuff down the bottom of that slide. And there's two reasons for this. One is that those are the governance and infrastructure considerations are important for people looking to build AI systems. And secondly, they could be useful as a gateway for insurers when you want to think about organizations using AI and how you're underwriting the AI risks related to their activities. So with AI, new tools, new risks. The use of AI comes with new risks, for example, hallucinated output, but also amplifies existing risks, for example, in terms of discrimination of protected variables or discrimination against certain segments. We've got a few examples up here. And that includes Zillow, that had an algorithmic buying and selling, property buying and selling model, which failed and resulted in a write-down of about $500 million. And I'm sure most of you can point to news articles and things you've seen of sensitive information flowing into AI models and data breaches out of AI models. So I think this picture sort of summarizes the promise and peril of AI quite well. It was generated using an AI image generator. And at first glance, it looks pretty cool and exciting and colorful. But when you look closer at the details, you'll notice a few hands out of place. You'll notice a few people having multiple legs, or more than two legs. And of course, it didn't even get the spelling of insurance right. So naturally, there are risks when it comes to using AI, and our focus on this talk is the risks and governance, but that in no way diminishes the opportunities that AI presents, and so you really want to look at both sides of that equation. We're going to focus on three perspectives, firstly regulation and legislation, and then look at impacts on existing lines of businesses that insurers write, and then close out with new product opportunities for insurers. This is going to be a quick overview. We do have an accompanying paper, so if you're interested, there's lots more detail in that. So I'm going to start by talking through what AI governance looks like. And there's a lot of frameworks and guidances that are developing around this. But I think it's important to first point out that with a lot of discussion around AI-specific legislation and new legislation relating to AI, we need to bear in mind that there are existing legislation, and those apply to outcomes and impacts regardless of how these arise, and that includes AI. So we've got a couple of quotes up here from the ASIC and APRA chairs that highlight this. And really what we see is that regulators will be looking to apply existing mechanisms to the use of AI. So for a quick overview of what the current framework looks like, we've got a summary up here of harms commonly associated with the risk of AI, and in the columns we've got the laws that might apply to those harms. Now, there's a bit of detail, you'd read through all those items in the rows, but the key takeaway really is that privacy laws, Australian consumer law, anti-discrimination laws, and a whole heap of other laws and obligations do apply to a lot of the harms commonly associated with the use of AI. We haven't got the Corporations Act up here. I will talk to that a bit later when we come to looking at duty of care. So that was the existing regulatory framework, or a brief summary, in that AI is governed by a lot of the laws, but we do expect more legislation and regulation around AI to come. In terms of AI-specific legislation, a lot of it's a work in progress at the moment. The government is consulting quite widely, and indications so far seem to point to a light-touch approach. In terms of the Privacy Act review, so the Privacy Act review did commence sometime in 2020, still ongoing, but there's two things we thought we should call out or highlight here, and these are provisions that will broaden the range of data that's considered personal information, and that's important because AI models are trained on a lot of data, and a lot of that will be personal information, and so you really want to be aware of your obligations around that as that review comes into force. And then secondly, just increasing consumer rights around the use of data. But having looked at the government's response to AI-specific legislation and the review for the Privacy Act and other frameworks, it looks like consultation is still going to be ongoing, and so that final form of the regulatory framework is quite uncertain. The Productivity Commission's view is that Australia is likely to be a regulation taker and lean on international developments in terms of regulating AI. And approaches overseas do differ quite materially by jurisdiction. So the US has a pragmatic approach where they started off with an executive order late, and a presidential executive order late last year, and that was to get things in place very quickly in terms of standards and guidelines, but followed that up with a more prescriptive policy for government agencies earlier this year. The UK has a more principles-based approach, which is decentralized to industry-specific regulators. And in terms of specific AI legislation, the EU AI Act was approved in March this year, and that's really the first legal framework on AI globally. Legislation, however, doesn't tell organizations how to practically implement good AI practices, but there are like a huge number of guidelines around this, and more coming out every day. We've bucketed them into three groups. So we've got ethics principles, governance frameworks, and standards. The distinction between these isn't perfect. There'll be a bit of overlap, but collectively applying those is often referred to responsible AI. So we'll talk through each of those components in a bit more detail, starting with ethics principles. So principles are broad guidelines that AI for how AI systems can be ethically developed and deployed. They are voluntary, and so a cynical view might be that, well, they're really just truisms and how much value do they really add? But we think there is a bit of guidance that comes from them. There are a bunch of prominent examples available, the OECD, the US, Singapore, which are listed up here. But just for a tangible view of what these look like, we've got Australia's eight AI ethics principles on the right, and you'll see themes that you would expect to be covered under there. So you've got fairness, transparency, explainability, accountability, and we're seeing that principle frameworks globally are all sort of converging along to the same sort of themes. The second component of responsible AI are governance frameworks, and again, there's a heap of information out there coming from governments, from unis, from professional bodies, from all over, really. Again, a few examples for reference. But the question comes up is that if you've got specific AI governance frameworks, how different are they from existing risk management frameworks, which a lot of insurers already have? So we've got a bit of a crib sheet for AI governance frameworks, but the point we're really making here is that most of these AI frameworks do converge on or look like existing risk management frameworks. So if you do work in risk management, you'll see the chart on the left, and that'll be quite familiar to you from the ISO 31000 standard on risk management. And the chart on the right is just the NIST governance framework. Not expecting you to be able to read all of that from where you're seated, but the point is they might look a bit different, but the themes are all broadly the same. The AI governance frameworks do potentially then build on that, and you do see controls for technical modeling and deployment of these systems. The third component of these responsible AI framework is standards. And like the other two, there are lots of standards out there. We've got some from the ISO up there and the IEEE. But we wanted to highlight the ISO 42001 standard, and that's because it's an AI management standard. And what that means is that organizations can gain certification for this standard, and that's quite important. So it allows them to provide evidence or show that they do have responsible AI practices embedded in their operations. And because of that, we think it will become the standard, AI standard. The coverage of the standards is pretty broad. Again, I'm not going to talk through each of those, but you can see it ranges from leadership and context of the organization all the way down to performance evaluation and improvement and all the way back up. So fairly broad coverage and fairly comprehensive. So that was a quick snapshot of governance and legislation. But in terms of insurers using AI, that's one aspect. Insurers are also underwriting risks where their insureds are using AI. And so this has an impact on existing lines of business. And so in this section, we'll point to some of those impacts. The first point to make is that insurers may find silent coverage for AI risks in existing products. We've got the four liability classes up top, and for those, our view is that there are immediate questions that the use of AI brings about and complexities, and over the next couple of slides I'll talk to those in a bit more detail. Down the bottom, we've got a few classes where the impacts are likely to be longer term. So, for example, automation of heavy machinery is likely to change the risk profile for workers' compensation portfolios, but that's likely to be a longer term effect, especially from where we are at the moment. Similarly, continued development of autonomous systems for cars is likely to change the frequency and severity risk profiles for both motor and CTP, but again, over a longer period. So we'll dig into liability in a bit more detail. And starting with the complex relation between AI and liability, the three main legal components to proving negligence when we think of liability, these are duty of care, a breach of duty of care, and causation. And the use of AI does introduce complexities to each of these. So for duty of care, questions arise of where you actually attribute liability when harm is caused by an AI system. For example, where foundation models are embedded in an AI system, does that duty of care lie with the developer of the foundation model, or instead does it lie with a downstream developer who's embedded that foundation model into their AI system? Or ultimately, does that duty of care just lie with the end consumer? So there are uncertainties and complexities in how you go about navigating that. For breach of duty of care, you're really looking to establish a standard that needs to be met and compare against that standard and determine whether the breach has occurred. And again, there's complexities in the use of AI around what that standard looks like. Is it the best model? Is it an average model? Is it the best human or an average human? Or is it something completely else? And so there's a lot of legal debate and arguments around this. And again, more complexities, and that makes it quite uncertain. And finally, causation. This is where you're trying to establish a direct link between the harm caused and the breach of duty of care, and often is the most difficult one to prove. It's the but for test, so but for the use of AI, would the harm still have occurred? Now, across all of these, there are a lot of complexities and legal aspects to consider. We're not going to talk through those in this session. We'll leave them to the legal experts. But the point here is just to highlight that liability is going to have complex issues with the use of AI coming in. We're also seeing case law emerging slowly, and we're seeing potential new legislation that will be introduced that will further add to that complexity. There have been some international developments to address some of these, and I'll talk through the EU AI Liability Directive a bit later. So, over the next couple of slides, what I'm going to do is just highlight a few of the impacts on existing lines of business or existing liability classes. I'll start with professional indemnity. So many professions are starting to integrate ChatGPT or similar systems into their regular workflows. We're also seeing more targeted AI tools being developed, for example, in medical diagnostic support. But the point here is that the use of AI doesn't remove the need to ensure quality and accuracy of the work. For insurers, you want to be aware of varied use of these AI systems across your insureds, and professions do show varied scrutiny around the output from AI models. And so the first step for insurers to mitigating this risk really is monitoring and speaking to insureds to understand what their exposure is. For D&O, the considerations are pretty similar to professional indemnity. Just here we're looking at the use of AI to support decisions made by business leaders. But the main point we wanted to highlight was the sections 180 and 181 of the Corporations Act that require directors to perform duties with care and with diligence. And that naturally extends to the use of AI. That responsibility doesn't go away, and so insurers need to be aware of how their risk exposures are changing with the increase in use of AI. Thirdly, for product liability, we're seeing AI increasingly being embedded in physical products. The obvious example is cars, but I'm sure we've seen numerous examples of AI and embedded AI-based decision-making in household appliances. Here, the key risk or the key issue to call out really is the proving liability for AI-related harm is really challenging to the end consumer, especially when you've got a large number of people involved in embedding AI in these products. You've got people involved from design, from development to deployment of AI, and identifying who's actually liable for an end consumer is really hard. There are measures that are being proposed to address this, and one of these is the EU Liability Directive, or AI Liability Directive, and provisions of this directive, which is still being at proposal stage and hasn't been built into legislation yet, but the provisions do look to ultimately make it easier for people to bring claims for harm caused by AI. And so insurers need to be aware of how the legislative framework's changing and potentially making it easier to bring these claims. And finally, cyber insurance. So there's two aspects to really call out for cyber. Firstly is that the use of AI has resulted in more sophisticated cyber attacks. But you also want to consider the offsetting impact of AI being used to strengthen your defenses. And it's really that net effect on your risk that you're looking to identify. With the use of AI does come a heightened risk of data breach. So we've got AI, we've got data flowing through a lot of newly developed AI systems, and even where organizations have fairly robust data governance frameworks, there's a fair bit of uncertainty to the extent that that applies to very new AI models, especially when it comes to using third-party systems or open source libraries. And again, just to reiterate, the provisions of the Privacy Act, that with a lot more of the data potentially being classified as personal information, that risk is heightened for existing cyber products. So as a quick overview of potential impacts on existing lines of business, and here we look at how insurers are starting to respond to these impacts. So firstly, they're looking to clarify coverage, removing ambiguity, tidying up policy wording, and this may include things like carve-outs, where they're explicitly putting in exclusions to not write risks that aren't in their appetite, or also riders to affirmatively provide coverage for risks that they do want to underwrite. Secondly, they're building out their underwriting requirements. So to better assess AI risk, insurers are starting to ask the question of insureds in terms of the use of AI and how that's affecting their activities. And it's really just getting to know and being able to better assess risk at that underwriting stage. The third one is expanding AI knowledge. This is, again, to support underwriting practice and relates to expertise and talent in the insurer's teams. AI is a fast-developing technology, and we're seeing changes come through very, very quickly. And so insurers are just looking to make sure that they have the right expertise to understand the risks and understand their exposures. And the last one is developing AI insurance solutions. So new product opportunities, insurers are potentially looking to underwrite AI risk. And that brings us to our next section, where we'll talk through some of those new product opportunities. I guess when you think about new products that insure AI risks, the first question that really comes up is, can you insure AI risks? So we've got a quote up here from the Geneva Papers, and they had a look at a number of risks and came to a fairly pessimistic view. So they identified significant problems relating to correlated losses, lack of data, information asymmetries, and also really questioned whether a sustainable insurance market could be developed. Well, let's fill in those blanks. So that is a quote from a 2014 paper, and that related to the cyber insurance market. And I think it's fair to say that the cyber insurance market's developed quite differently to what you might have thought in 2014 reading that quote. Munich Re, for example, has estimated global premiums to be in the region of $14 billion last year, and that's expected to double over the next 4 years. So maybe with similar concerns around correlated losses or potential lack of data or the opportunity, for correlated losses, lack of data, there is potential that you could potentially look at underwriting a cyber, a AI insurance product. The next thing we did was looked at, well, are insurers really underwriting AI risk, and are there any products on the market? I've got three examples up here. So the first one's from Munich, from Munich Re, and they've got a performance guarantee product that provides cover for damage caused when an AI model doesn't perform as expected or an AI model fails. The second example is from a Canadian startup called Armilla. And they're selling a warranty product that covers the cost, covers the investment cost of a vendor's customers when an AI model fails or doesn't perform as expected. And thirdly, we've got an example from Vouch, which is a US-based insurer focusing on the tech sector. And they've just started offering a liability product that provides coverage for damages awarded in lawsuits. And that also includes defense costs in dealing with those lawsuits. So, yeah, there are products being written. And from there on, we've gone to look at four examples of potential AI-related insurance products, and I'll talk through some of the opportunities for insurers, some of the risks around these four products, and then round it out with some practical considerations for insurers when they're developing new AI-related insurance products. So I'll start off with algorithmic liability, and this product would cover cover the cost of injury or financial loss when an AI model doesn't perform as expected, fairly similar to Munich Re's offering. And we are seeing an increasing appetite from companies to deploy AI, particularly in the last year or so, or the last 2 years, really, where ChatGPT has captured a lot of people's attention. But there are persisting concerns around the accuracy of these models. And we think that an immediate solution for companies that aren't really confident to employ AI would be an insurance product that covers this cost. The key risks around a product like this, we think, will relate to the downstream models that embed foundation models in their systems. In this case, the insureds aren't really maintaining those models, and so there's more uncertainty for insurers, less visibility for insureds and insurers potentially, and also concentration risk where you've got a few foundation models shared across a large proportion of your insured book. The second product we consider is an IP infringement product, and that would provide cover to developers against damages relating to intellectual property infringement. There are legal uncertainties at the moment, and that poses a market. Like a lot of insurance products, uncertainties potentially create a market for insurers. But I think a really good example of this is from Microsoft. So Microsoft's committed to pay legal damages on behalf of their customers of their Copilot services. Microsoft's a really large company. Not all developers will be able to offer this sort of backing, and so that puts them at a bit of a disadvantage in terms of their product offering. And we think there's a potential opportunity for insurers to come in and underwrite this risk. Similar to the algorithmic liability product, there are risks when it comes to foundation models, particularly around IP when Gen AI models are more prominent, and a lot of those are based on foundation models. The third product we looked at was regulatory compliance cover. This would cover the cost of penalties or fines from accidental non-compliance with government regulations. Organizations may seek to look for cover against penalties that are in AI-specific legislation, so the EU AI Act does have provisions for fairly significant fines and penalties, but also just the uncertainty around how the current legislative and regulatory framework is going to be interpreted across different use cases creates a bit of uncertainty and potentially a market for an insurance product. When you talk about fines and penalties, moral hazards and adverse selection come to mind quite quickly. These are risks in writing a product like this, but we think these are manageable with careful product design and with fairly robust underwriting. And you can also look at just cyber insurance examples where a lot of cyber insurance products do offer cover for penalties and fines. And so it does seem that an AI-based insurance product could do the same. And finally, we've got an AI assurance indemnity product. This really is just a specialized form of professional indemnity. But the reason we've stripped it out and highlighted it as a separate product is we are seeing a growing market here of certifiers of AI models. So I talked to our Miller example just earlier, and that was their warranty insurance product. That company also offers a audit service or audit product, and what they do is assess organizations' AI models for things like safety and trustworthiness and a bunch of other criteria, and basically put their stamp on that if those systems meet the standards that they set. We're seeing, due to the persisting mistrust in AI, we're seeing a bunch of these certifiers come up. And in terms of providing indemnity cover for those certifiers, insurers really need to have the right level of expertise and understand the risks that are involved. AI is fast developing. For insurers, you want to be on top of developments in AI, but you also want to be able to assess riskiness of your insureds, and that means understanding how proficient they are at really assessing people's models. And so a specialized product is potentially an opportunity. So those are four examples of potential insurance products. Finally, what we did look at is practical matters in new product development. And I think the first thing you want to consider is insurability. So briefly touched on this when we looked at the quote from the Geneva Papers and cyber insurance, and our paper does go into a bit more of a detailed discussion around insurability of these products. There are concerns, concentration risks, adverse selection, moral hazards, lack of data. But we think that careful product design can address a lot of these issues, and cyber is a good example to point to. There's a few other practical matters that are also worth considering for insurers. Firstly, capital. Capital requirements are intended to reflect the risk borne by regulated entities. A new AI-based and AI-related insurance product is fairly risky and uncertain, and so we think that first movers in this area will be organizations with large capital bases like reinsurers, and those are like fairly broad risk appetites like Lloyd's syndicates. I briefly touched on product design and underwriting earlier, just to reiterate that we can draw parallels with how the cyber insurance market developed. Early cyber offerings did have fairly modest limits, fairly limited offerings, and insurers looked to expand that as the market matured and as experience emerged. And so we think a similar approach could work for an AI-related insurance product. In terms of pricing, the main call out here is just on the limited data. These are new products. There's very little data out there, and initial work in underwriting these risks or launching these products will likely entail relying on indirect factors like questionnaires and surveys. And what we did see in the cyber market, again, drawing a parallel to that, was more sharing of data and collaboration between insurers and partners. And we think the same might apply with AI-related insurance products. In terms of claims assessment and management, you do need to have the right expertise in your team to manage claims correctly, to understand claims correctly. You also need the right legal expertise. The legal framework is still very much in flux, locally and internationally. If you're insuring local companies that are selling products overseas, they will or potentially will be subject to regulations in those jurisdictions, and so you really need to have the right legal expertise in-house. The last two are just accumulation of losses. So I spoke to this quite a bit, mostly around foundation models, and so yes, catastrophic-like events are plausible. Again, drawing a parallel to cyber, this wouldn't be too dissimilar to a large cloud-based computing platform dropping off, and so that sort of catastrophic event, you can sort of draw parallels to AI risk and foundation models and how they might play out. And finally, reinsurance. When we talked about those existing products on the market, two of those three had reinsurer involvement. So you had Munich Re, that's got their own product, and Armilla's heavily backed by a few reinsurers. So we think there will be more reinsurer activity in this area. So that was a quick overview across three perspectives of AI in insurance and insuring AI. There's a fair bit of detail in there, but here are the key takeaways. Firstly, this has been rapid expansion in AI application, but you need to weigh the opportunities with the risks. Secondly, legislation and regulation that's already in place does apply. A lot of the conversation focuses on new regulation and legislation, but there are existing frameworks and obligations that insurers and other companies need to align with. Third, an increasing use of AI will have an impact on existing lines of business, particularly for liability classes, where we have started seeing immediate impacts. And just finally, we think there are opportunities for insurers to develop and market products targeted at AI-related risks. Having said that, you do need to have fairly careful product design, fairly robust underwriting, and a bit of pragmatism to make sure that the products you're writing do meet that insurability criteria and are sensible. Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
Testing. Perfect. Kush, thank you so much. You're a very gifted speaker, if you don't mind me saying, and I think that was a very comprehensive view of the current landscape within our artificially intelligent world that we are now embracing, and of course the opportunities that insurers have to look forward to going forward. I would still encourage you during the Q&A session, if you do have any questions, of course, from today's session, just pop it down in your app, and not to quote Star Wars, but this is the way. Please make use of the app and pop in your question, and then we can put those forward to Kush. But Kush, just to maybe kick things off, you mentioned a number of things of artificial intelligence's impact on the underwriting landscape and, of course, the claims management landscape. I'm, of course, very biased. I'm very interested in these areas. So we'd love to maybe give you the opportunity to go a little bit deeper into those two areas and maybe talk about some of the intricacies there.
Yeah, sure. Underwriting is quite interesting. What we are seeing in the research we've done and what's published online is underwriting processes are becoming quite onerous when insurers are starting to try to assess AI risk. We have a wide variety of different AI applications and models across insureds. And so you can't really have this cookie-cutter approach. Every insured is quite different. And that process is fairly intensive, resource-intensive, time-intensive, and also just needs the right amount of expertise. So it is looking like a fairly onerous exercise. I think it's worth pointing out that, and one of the reasons we did talk to the ISO standard was that having an AI management standard and having organizations or insureds that are certified for meeting that standard could substitute some of that work that goes into underwriting. It could be an important determinant of how responsible insureds' AI practices are.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kush. Another question is, in today's landscape, of course, many of us in the insurance industry are fairly well-versed in how much regulations we have within the insurance company and how much effort goes into those landscapes and the risk framework. How do you see the artificial intelligence landscape and all of those regulations you mentioned and ethics around AI impacting either for or against potentially the current risk management frameworks that insurers may have?
Sure. I think a lot of you will agree insurers are already very highly regulated and do have fairly robust risk management frameworks and practices. In terms of AI risk management, a lot of it looks to be an extension of what's already in place. So you'd look at, for insurers, identifying gaps in the existing processes. Traditionally, a lot of the modeling applications have been in certain areas of the value chains and underwriting and pricing, and we think that those areas could be expanded to incorporate AI, or probably already incorporate AI risk quite well. but it's about identifying gaps elsewhere where AI is being applied in areas of claims management or product or marketing or and in these other areas, potentially the frameworks aren't as well developed or aren't adapted for AI, and you'd look to fill those gaps, basically.
100%. Thank you so much, Kush. I do believe that's pretty much all the time we have for today. Kush will still be here for the rest of the day, I'm sure. And when it comes to lunchtime, I'm sure you can seek him out to ask him some more questions if you do about AI. But we'd like to thank you so much for your time here today and enjoy the rest of the day ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.